Say something, goddammit. You're on television. You're live to the whole world.
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast. I am Oscar. With me today is...
Ralph.
And Luke will be available later. For those who don't know, and for those who are new to the show, welcome, first of all. Secondly, this is episode number 57? 58. I think it's 57. And what we typically do is that we pick three films, new or newish, films for us to review in one go. And those three films this week will be, let's see, Black Klansman, which is Spike Lee's latest film. Another is a Netflix original, I guess, or one of the movies they bought from this year or whatever. It's a comedy, or not a rom-com, but it's a comedy. Let's call it a comedy. Called Like Father, which stars Kelsey Grammer and Kristen Bell. And then we'll also review our third film, not in that particular order, by the way. Our third film, will actually be our first review today, is Christopher Robin, the latest film by the guy who did Robert Forster, I think his name is.
Which they brought it up like three times during the movie, right, in the beginning credits?
Is it Robert Forster? Is that an actor?
It's Forster. You're right. You're right about the Forster.
I think Forster's right. They brought it up a lot in the movie, you think?
There was like three or two times in the credits intro, like directed by Robert Forster. And then later again, directed by Robert Forster. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, maybe it's like he thinks highly of himself. I don't know. I mean, he's not unpopular. He has made, he directed World War Z, for example.
Okay.
He did Stranger Than Fiction. Remember that one?
Apparently that's
Mark Forster. Mark. Sure. That's his name, Mark. Anyway, he did. Have you seen that one, Stranger Than Fiction?
I have.
I think that's the right one with that comedian guy.
Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell, thank you. There's another one or two. But yeah, he's done a few movies that are popular for better or good. Like, you know, some negatively popular, but overall they're popular. So yeah, and he's a strange cat. He does like very different types of movies in general.
Well,
I think he did Finding Neverland.
Oh, okay.
Not 100% though. Anyway. So that's the third film. And what we also typically do on the show is that before we do any other reviews, we talk about some of our recent discoveries where Ralph and I, in this case, will talk about some of the films or film-liking things we've watched since our last episode that we want to, like, catch you up on, so to speak. So without further ado, we're going to get into that.
You're going to hate me. I have another movie that I'm going to add to my list.
Okay, that's fine. Well, before we get into the thing, I was going to say two more things. One is that if you want to reach us, you can reach us at podmoviecast@gmail.com. That is podmoviecast@gmail.com. For any questions or fucked upperies or mistakes we may have said offhandedly, like a mistake like I just did there with Robert Forster, Mark Forster, things like that, or anything you want to say, that would be lovely. Also, check out our website. We do have a website. It's otherpodcast.com. Otherpodcast.com is our website where you can find bonus episodes, marathon episodes. Marathons are where we pick a topic or a genre or a decade or a director or something, and we go in depth into that type of thing. And we'll each pick movies and we review them every week. It's our way of like including older films, because, you know, we don't like to live just in the now, even though that's where everyone is. So we do those. So yeah, we do a bunch of stuff on there. We have two years of stuff on there. So check it out, guys. So now, for real, without further ado, we'll get into our recent discoveries. Ralph, why don't you start us off with the third one that you were going to add?
All right. The one I'm adding.
It's not the one you're adding.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever.
Going to would be that I still might not do it. Batman and Harley Quinn. So I saw Batman and Harley Quinn. It was on Amazon Prime, so I had to watch it. It is a DC Universe, animated movie. I will read the quick description. Batman and Nightwing are forced to team up with the Joker's sometimes girlfriend, Harley Quinn, to stop a global threat brought by Poison Ivy and Jason Woodrow, the Floronic Man. Of the Harley Quinn themed, where there's more jokey stuff going on, and it's more it's more slapsticky, I guess I would say, in the Batman world and in the animated this world.
Yeah.
It's not Batman centric. It's almost more like Harley Quinn theme centric. So there's a lot of funny stuff going on, a lot of things like that, a lot of jokes being played on people, and even Batman and Robin, or Nightwing, should I say, are in on it. You know, they're all. That's how the whole movie's portrayed. So it's a different take on a normal thing in a movie, in a Batman movie, or that you've seen. Like, it's not Batman Dark Knight or Year One. You know, stuff like that.
Okay.
Or it's not. I guess a better example would be like Batman and the Red Hood, Under the Red Hood. Right.
Okay.
You seen that one?
Maybe. I don't remember.
All right. By the way, I have all of the movies. I have the collection at home. It was given to me as a birthday gift.
Oh, was it on the iTunes? Was it physical?
No, it's just physical.
Okay.
So I thought it was digital also, which would have been badass, but it's just physical. So
it's okay.
Regardless. I'll borrow it. This is on Amazon Instant. That's where I saw it. And it was fun. It was a fun watch. I had some fun watching it. I didn't think it was going to be that kind of movie. I thought it was going to be a little bit more serious. A little bit more darker, but they went the brighter side of it.
Okay.
Which was kind of refreshing for a Batman movie. It almost appealed to kids more than it did to, I guess, the more adult fans.
Okay.
Although they do make adult-like jokes. Which
they all do.
They all do, yeah.
Okay.
That's my first movie. My second movie that I saw is Skyscraper. I know you saw it earlier in the year.
That's not the order.
I also saw it. A security expert must infiltrate a burning skyscraper 225 stories above the ground when his family are trapped inside by criminals. That's a good way. This is a Dwayne The Rock Johnson or Dwayne Johnson. Nev Campbell, go figure. Fucking shit. Sheen Han and Roland Moeller or Moyer are in the big people in this movie. And this feels like a 90s movie with today's technology. Everything 90s, 80s.
Did you
like
hear,
the 80s.
Did you hear my... I put in my recent discoveries last show. Did you hear it?
No, I did not.
Okay. Go ahead. Okay. I mentioned that too. That was like very 90s.
I mean, it just feels like that. And super predictable. But it was fun. It was still fun. I still had fun watching the movie. I still saw the action. I thought it was cool. I like how the world is watching also on gigantic screens
in
China. It was funny. Like little things in the movie. I was really wondering what they were going to do with that prosthetic leg. And I was like, when are we using this prosthetic leg? Where and when? It was kind of cool when they did use it. I was like, all right, that's interesting. It was cool though. Overall, it was a cool movie. Cool movie to watch. Just like a flavor of the week thing. There's nothing else in theaters. Like, this movie did well, I think, because there was nothing else there.
Did it do well?
I don't know. I think it did, but it did well in my head. So that's all that matters.
Right. Okay, cool. I'm glad you liked it. I'm glad somebody liked it.
Yeah. And then the other movie that I think did really well in the box office, but I'm not too sure, sticking with the DC Universe stuff, is Teen Titans Go to the Movies. Because that's the name of the show, and then they just add it to the movies. So it's a villain's maniacal plan for world domination sidetracks five teenage superheroes who dream of Hollywood stardom. So basically, this is I love Teen Titans, the original show. Okay, this is me talking, right? But then they came out with Teen Titans Go. I saw some of it, and it's all just slapstick and bullshit humor and music and stuff, and you're just like, oh, okay, this is nothing to do with anything, right? And then they made a movie for these guys, and I was like, wow, I never thought we would be here. Because I stopped watching that show. Obviously, I'm not saying because I stopped watching it should be bad, right? Obviously, it does well, but it hits more of the children audience because it's just dumb. It's just dumb nonsense on TV. I actually like the other plot of stuff, and in this one, it's not. And they start off kind of like, basically, the movie tells you, like, we're dumb. Like, we're the sidekicks, and people don't even like us. What's it called? We're not even considered superheroes in the eyes of superheroes in this world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the real Teen Titans world, they are. So this is really weird. It's a really weird dynamic thing that they have going. But it is funny. I had a lot of laugh out loud moments in this movie. Okay. A lot of really weird references. John Travolta's in this movie, voice acting Superman. And it's kind of funny because when you first hear him, you're like, okay, wait, Superman's John Travolta? Like, this, not John Travolta, my apologies, Nicolas Cage. My apologies.
Oh, that's oh, okay.
Nick Cage. And I'm like, what is going on here? So yeah, there was some interesting stuff going on in this movie. Yeah, Nick Cage is Superman. Fucking Michael Bolton's in the movie a couple times. This weird part of the movie that's just like all music stuff.
I would hope so.
Yeah, hold on. Will Arnett and Kristen Bell are the two other, like, they're the villains in the movie, the voice actor.
Okay.
And the main villain is Slade. And it was funny because, like, the whole movie puts portrayed that Slade wants world domination and stuff. And he does it by, he does this cool thing. I'm just going to spoil the movie, so, because I know you're not going to watch it.
No.
He does this cool thing where his alter ego is a chick, a female director, who directs superhero movies to keep all the superheroes busy by directing movies about them. And he doesn't take the Teen Titans serious, so the Teen Titans are the ones that take him down.
Yeah, okay.
It ends up working like that. And, like, every time they say Slade, they always, there's a joke where everyone's like, because Slade sounds so cool to say, it's like, Slade, right?
Yeah.
And it just everyone does it, everyone in the movie. But that's, like, the whole purpose. And they have this really cool section in the movie, which I'll stop after this, because I'm talking way more about this movie than I really should be, is, They're showing, like, the upcoming movies in a trailer because Batman has his, like, fourth flick coming out, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, the next movie coming out is the Batmobile, right? It's a standalone movie with the Batmobile, right? And Robin keeps thinking there's a movie about him coming up. And then the next one is, like, Utility Belt coming out in 2018. Like, it's like, what? Utility Belt, the movie. And then you're like, okay, there's one more Batman movie. Like, it's got to be Alfred. Like, his best sidekick. And you're just like, what the fuck? Like, they're making movies just about everything.
And that's funny.
It's really funny. There's some really cool references.
I told you it was going to be funny when I first suggested it as a bonus.
Yeah, I know.
For last month.
And it was funny. And it was fun to watch. Leo had an okay time. Just because, obviously, he doesn't get a lot of the humor. But overall, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So those are your three films. I saw three films as well, one of which is Rampage. Speaking of Dwayne The Rock.
Hey, how was that movie?
Oh, well, let me read the description first.
How horrible. Okay, go ahead.
When three different animals become infected with a dangerous pathogen, a primatologist and a geneticist team up to stop them from destroying Chicago. Yes, that's true. Chicago does get beaten up a little bit in this movie. It is better than Skyscraper. I really hated Skyscraper, though.
Really?
Yeah, I really didn't like it. Think I give it one star? Not even sure anymore. I really didn't like it. Well, for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
I like stuff in it.
Yeah, but, don't get me wrong. The movie, there's nothing, like, nothing amazing about the movie.
At least Rampage, I got to have fun. So, it's
did
amazing.
You get to
the,
hear,
so I think
Smashing Pumpkins over and over again because that trailer ruined the movie for me.
I don't think I remember any Smashing Pumpkins in the movie, but
well, no, it's just
I don't remember the trailer.
In the trailer, it's like the whole thing is like the world is a vampire and the wolf comes and attacks.
No, but the wolf stuff is really badass, though.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
I really like the wolf stuff, and like
so before I saw Skyscraper, we told ourselves we should watch Rampage to go see Skyscraper.
That's why I saw him.
Right. But so now we're gonna watch Rampage because we obviously didn't see Rampage, or else I would have brought it up.
Right. So now you got to see that movie. So next time we'll see.
Actually,
we'll hear your review.
Maybe luckily I didn't see Rampage because if it's a better movie and I went to go see Skyscraper, I would have been like, "Well, this is a piece of shit."
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, the same order I'm watching these, the same order you're gonna watch them.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't know what that means. So Rampage has not a great movie, right? Obviously,
I'm not expecting anything from movies.
Then it's not great.
I'm expecting them to beat Transformer movies. That's
they well, this one barely beats this one beats most of them. Maybe even the first one.
Oh wow!
Maybe
I like the first one.
Maybe I like the first one too.
Yeah.
But I don't love the first one. And so this movie,
I love what it did for cinema.
This movie does a lot of somersaults to explain away why these three different creatures who got accidentally, one of them being this monkey or primate, whatever. That Dwayne The Rock Johnson's character is in charge of. He taught him sign language. You can talk to him. They're best friends kind of thing. And slowly but surely, they keep growing in size. The wolf is a lone wolf, obviously, and the crocodile is... I mean, they use the crocodile, which, by the way, they spoil in the trailers. Sucks. to good effect in the movie. Like, if you forget there is one, you know, it's pretty good, actually. Because they take their time to reveal that fucker. And it's really cool. Like, it's revealed to the army. Like, you know, as an audience viewer, but, you know, yeah. And then since it's been so long, you're like, oh, right, the croc. And it comes out at the right time. Nice. So that's cool and stuff. And the whole thing is that they do, like I said, somersaults to include these corporate villains who are, you know, who made this thing and they just want money. And so they're going to bring them to Chicago to steal something. You know, like, it's really awful and stupid. You don't need it. And, yeah, so all that stuff has to happen, I guess. But at least some pretty cool action involving climbing the Sears Tower. I'm not calling it the other thing. Climbing the Sears Tower and, like, to stop this horrible noise that attracts them there. And then from there on, that's when the real action begins because, like, how the fuck are they going to take down these three creatures when they start fighting each other afterwards? It's really cool.
Interesting.
So I like it for...
Interesting.
For
interesting. That's cool.
It's fun.
I'll watch but, it with. I mean, I'll watch it with a friend of the show, Matt.
The Rock though plays like really just like barely archetypes of characters in these movies, Skyscraper and this one. Mm-hmm. Like he just plays like for example, like in Skyscraper, my problem was that he was too much the straight man. He did not know he was in a B movie. I think.
I think he didn't know he was in a B movie, and I think he was trying to. Make it a really truly B movie by being
it didn't do the Black Dynamite effect. It did the opposite,
right.
Where like it feels like nobody told him, but not in a good way, like in a bad way. Yeah. And then in this one, he's like he's anti humans because they don't hurt animals, and he's very pro animal only kind of guy. And it's just like it's just two dimensional in that way, but it's fine because it's The Rock and he's charming. And Baller season 4 is coming out soon in a minute. So
yeah, they're gonna. They're going to start a war or something. That's the tagline for Ballers, I think.
Yeah, I saw the trailer.
They're
too.
Going to war or something.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, so that's Rampage. I probably spoke too much about it, honestly. But here's the next one for you. I saw Steven Soderbergh's latest film. Did you know he released one this year off?
The answer is no. I shook my head no.
The movie's low key. It's called Unsane. Not insane, Unsane. All one word. Mm-hmm. A young woman is involuntarily committed to a mental institution where she is confronted by her greatest fear. But is it real or a product of her delusion? It's a strange synopsis. I will add a few more little quips to it, meaning like so she's involuntarily committed to this thing because she's a kind of fucked up adult person, and she
so
likes
your typical
to
millennial.
Yeah, no, I thought no, maybe she's fucked up in like strange ways. But like she'll get her, like she likes talking to psychiatrists and like letting off steam. Except for this particular case, they took her seriously, so they admitted her. And then one day turned into a week and turned into, you know, kind of thing. And the movie is both politically charged about talking about how that works and how the system is failing those people that actually need help versus the people that are being committed to these things for these companies to make money off them. Like, it does that. It does a little dance a couple times. But the movie... eventually goes to the real plot of the story, which is Claire Foy, who is the main actress, mm-hmm. and nails it, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
She really nails it. She is, when she gets there, one problem doubles and snowballs into a much bigger problem from her past involving a psycho ex-boyfriend that finds her, that she had to move away states from.
Oh, wow.
To run away kind of thing. He finds her there at the mental institution where she has literally no power to defend herself. And it becomes a thing about that, and it's really, really good. Fucked up, cray cray, good. The filming of the movie, it's like one of those ultra rare real things. It's like shot on a news camera kind of style.
Oh fuck!
So like it has a different feel to it, mm-hmm. but it does have a more of a blunt feel because of it. So if you want to watch a nice little thriller, it's a good movie. Unsane. Check it out. It just came out on VOD and shit. The other one I saw was Bo Burnham's first film. You know who that is, right?
Not personally, but yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know Steven Soderbergh either. Eighth grade. An introverted teenage girl tries to survive the last week of her disastrous eighth grade year before leaving to start high school. It is in theaters right now. It is wide released for its version of it, but it's not that indie, though. I can find it in, You know what I meant. It's like it's obviously in cinema indie houses as well, but it's also like you can find it at AMC, but like one of those big ones that have more movies than usual.
Yeah, well they do AMC.
But they won't be everywhere.
AMC Independent. That's what they call this. They name them like that.
Yeah, so they're not impossible. And he wrote and directed it. He doesn't star in it, thank God. And it stars Elsie Fisher. I'm just going to say her, Elsie Fisher, who plays Kayla, and who is really, really fantastic in this movie. I really was worried that I wasn't going to like it, not just because of my my own opinions on day-to-day stuff or how I grew up versus how other people grew up. This is a white girl in today's age. This is like if this was filmed, let's say, 5 years ago as opposed to when we graduated eighth grade rough, which was a lot longer than that. So it's different feels, right? But at the same time, they managed to capture the bottle, so to speak. He managed to capture the bottle essence of the introvertedness, the awkwardness, the mistakes of youth, the folly of thought, you know, of lack of thoughts involved into, you know, doing something. Obviously, ranging hormones as it happens. It's all very funny, but also it plays like a horror movie, low key. Like it's more horrifying than Unsane, for example, for me. And it's kind of like it's both the opposite, and it's a good pairing with Tully. What Tully does for parenting, this one does for childhood.
Interesting, okay.
In a weird way.
Good and way to put it for me if you really actually want to watch this movie now.
You really wanted to or you don't want to?
I didn't want to, but good way to put it for me to watch this movie now.
Yes, I guess I am. But that's the first thing I came out of the theater thinking of Tully because I can see even that character in that movie.
Look at you knowing your audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I can see like people like, for example, like parents have spoken about this film, talk about this one particular car scene in eighth grade that is horrifying to them, and it made me think of, you know, like the essence of, there's always that one scene in Tully that people talk about that relates to whatever universal thing that everyone can relate to. And like, that's the one for parents. What's the one for kids? For being something different. But I'm suggesting definitely watch it, guys, and let us know what that moment feels closer to you. Mm-hmm. It is an eighth grade girl, or 13, 12 year old, whatever their age is. But it's
13
really cool.
to 14.
13 to 14. But yeah, it is a really good movie. And I'm very surprised that Bo Burnham, of all of the comedians, came out with this film as his first film. And great soundtrack, by the way. Really good soundtrack. Really dig. It's like I'm not familiar with genres, but it's like techno or something. But it's really good. It's really...
I'm glad to hear.
Yeah, I really liked it. I don't know how he did it.
Cool.
So, that's what I've been watching. Those are our recent discoveries. You know. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to get into our first review of the evening, which is what, Ralph, do you know?
Christopher Robin.
Oh, my God. Thank you for saying it in that accent.
Right. I knew you weren't.
Well, no. I can't do accents. But thank you. We will be reviewing Christopher Robin. Stay with us.
The tree I remember was in the countryside, not here in London. There's no opening.
I suppose it's where it needs to be.
That's a silly explanation.
Why, thank you.
Pooh, why are you here?
Oh, yes, I need your help. I've lost all of my friends.
Let's get to the bottom of this. Look up, Pooh. Here I come. It would appear that I am stuck.
Have you just eaten honey?
I have not just eaten honey.
I wonder which way.
I always get to where I'm going by walking away from where I have been.
Do you?
That's the way I do it.
Hello, Eeyore.
Christopher Robin, it's you. Played again.
Let's go and see if we can find Piglet.
I've already stayed far too long. Hello, everyone. So nice to see you all again.
Why, thank you.
Silly old bear.
A working-class family man, Christopher Robin, encounters his childhood friend, Winnie the Pooh, who helps him to rediscover the joys of life.
Remember when you tried to...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a movie directed by Mark Forster.
Mark, yeah.
Yeah, Mark. With a C, not a K.
So what were the movies he did?
I can look it up real quick. Hold on. He's bald, by the way. He produced War World Z. Hold on. Director. He did World War Z.
Mm-hmm.
Machine Gun Preacher.
Oh.
Quantum of Solace.
That's the one. That's the one, yeah.
He did The Kite Runner, Stranger Than Fiction, yeah. Finding Neverland, Monster's Ball.
Monster's Ball, that's the other one that he's famous for.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, cool. This is a weird movie with Ryan Gosling, I want to think.
Yeah, I didn't say anything that wasn't big. So.
Oh.
He did like three other ones.
Excuse me.
I just left to be there.
The Kite Runner is big? Yeah, I guess it is. All right, so Christopher Robin, how do you say it?
I have to sneeze, hold up.
I mean, should we start by saying what's our relationship with
Christopher Robin
with Winnie the Pooh and stuff? Either the books, the shows, the movies. I mean, it's a good place to start. I think people like to know, that kind of thing. It's like if you bring in someone who hasn't read a single Marvel comic book or any of the movies, and they watch a big temple blockbuster Marvel movie, right, without knowing any of that history, you know, it's good to, like, it's like, it's almost like mandatory if they should definitely, people should want to know if that person knows the stuff or not.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, people probably want to know it for bad reasons, but I think it's a good thing to know. So what is your relationship to
I watched the show.
So trademark.
I watched the show growing up.
Okay.
I mean, just to plain and simple, it's incorporated in one of my favorite video games also. So, like, Kingdom Hearts.
Is it really in Kingdom Hearts? Yeah, Winnie the Pooh is not Disney, though. Wait, is it Disney? I didn't know that. Is it really? Huh. I mean, I know that Disney made this particular movie, but I know that they own everything, so I figured they just did it because they own everything.
They own everything.
But I didn't know that that was their one of their creations.
Didn't they absorb the company who did it or something?
Okay. Because it is a different style than Disney. Mm-hmm. That's why I was so convinced that it wasn't Disney.
Yeah.
Okay. I have even less than you. I do. By the way, did you read the books and stuff or any of that?
Some, but nothing more than maybe a book.
Okay.
But I never got into it. I know friends who are really into it, though.
Right. No, definitely. I have friends, too, that have all the plushies and shit. But I have even less than you do. I barely remember the show, if I saw it at all. And less of the books. Never been a big proponent of the thing, you know? Like, I never...
I have a question.
Maybe I did, I just don't remember.
Who's your favorite character?
I'm going to base it on this movie. Because that's all I remember, really.
So it's Eeyore.
No. Mm-hmm. Although he's definitely the funniest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in general, I think he's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like the... So the thing is that I think cuteness wins more. So it's Piglet.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I've always hated Piglet.
I can see why you would hate her. It. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I can see why. But, like, I just want to fix her anxieties. I just want to, you know...
I hear you.
Like, don't be afraid of the dark. The dark is your friend, you know? So, yeah. That's why she's my favorite, I guess.
Okay.
What about you?
Eeyore. I mean,
Eeyore.
But growing up, Tigger.
Every boy would say Tigger because he's jumping around all the time and he can jump higher.
So Tigger's the best.
Yeah, Tigger is pretty good. He does his song, too. So, I'm sure... So, yeah, that's another great thing about... So, like... Since I don't know much about the history of Winnie the Pooh, I didn't get all the, I imagine to be lots of references for people who have seen him, right? Lots of, like, probably when Tigger sings that song about hopping, he probably sings that in the first episode or something.
Sure.
I'm positive he does.
Yeah.
It looked like one of those moments, like, oh, this is for the fans,
mm-hmm.
you know? But if you're not a fan, like I wasn't, I can still enjoy it. And I did enjoy it. So
I have
this movie kind of crosses both.
While we're in the subject of like just talking about the characters themselves, what did you think of the interpretations of them, the realistic
versions? Yes, that's definitely a big question for me. And by the way, we do have a spoiler section. Not that it really matters, but
spoiling, but yeah.
No, but we will have a spoiler section. The aesthetic of this movie is how it feels like Where the Wild Things Are, except that Where the Wild Things Are it's definitely more... I don't want to say artistic necessarily, but that's my go-to answer. So I'll just say artistic for now until I can find a better one. It's more aesthetically.
Well, I think this one is almost purposely gloomy.
So
our characters are gloomy as well.
Yes, I mean, and Mark Forster is a strange cat. He does
well. Specifically, I felt like Tigger was the least colorful person in the movie.
And
he's supposed to be this bright striped tiger. You know, tiger colors.
I'm curious. That was going to lead to my other question, but let's get into the aesthetics. I really liked it. So I'm like, how do they combine the real world Ewan McGregor and his business life, let's say, and to this forest and these fake animals, and the idea of making them not real animals, but making them like animatronically real plushies. It's a good answer. I think it's a great way to do it.
Except for two of them, but yeah.
Except for you, Tigger, and who else?
No, there's two of them that weren't animatronic. I think there was also CGI.
Oh, the owl.
And the bunny.
Yeah. Yeah, and you could tell they wanted to temper them in the movie as much as possible, probably to not have the glaring difference. Because when you have a puppet next to a CGI creation, the differences are much more striking. And it takes you out of the movie.
It really does. And actually, the very end of the movie, when they show the owl, that's when you were like, oh, wow. There is a big difference here.
Yeah, it is. So I went through that, and that's probably why they took it out as much as they could.
They're also a lot like super important. They are important characters, and they play their roles, but they're not like the biggest characters in comparison.
Is that the same owl that licks the Tootsie Roll
it feels
three
like
times
it.
Uh-huh. And then takes a bite out of it?
It feels like it, yeah.
Okay. How but many licks not. Does it take to get to the center of the Tootsie Pop?
The world may never know.
I think so. They may never know. So, yeah. I liked it, but overall, I love the aesthetic.
I liked it.
The gloominess like it was fine.
I thought, for example, Pooh gets his color towards the end of the movie. Like he looks a little bit more colorful.
See, I thought they were gonna play with
the colors himself.
Yeah, a little bit more.
So did I, but they didn't.
If they did, it was very subtle.
But Pooh is a very subtle one, because you see him most of the movie.
Yeah,
and he almost has like a little glow to him.
Yes.
But I like how everybody looked like very plush, very stuffed animal like stuff. Yeah. Overall, I did like that. It was cool.
Yeah, it's almost like an adult version of a child's dream, you know?
Right.
So if that's the feeling that Mark Forster and company are trying to evoke, I think it succeeded, because that's how I think of it. Anyway, but let's move on to something that's also very crucial to the plot, is that the movie doesn't explain anything. The movie goes for just the emotional, personal feel of Christopher Robin and his family, as well as the fans have with Winnie the Pooh, the character in Friends. The movie sticks with just that alone, meaning they don't have to explain away why these creatures exist, if they're real, or if they're in his head. Like, did you just like how it was all just out in the open? They were real. This place was real. If the fucking tree comes whenever it wants, not a big deal, guys.
Yeah,
right?
Like, I did like that.
Okay.
But I did like the fact that they play around the fact that he's losing his mind.
Well, yeah, because no one else will believe it. And obviously, he is probably the only human being that's alive that's discovered it.
Yeah.
Right? Because no one ever goes back or talks about it or references another human, anything like that. I will say one thing, though. One thing that I don't think this movie does a good job of, that I think is based solely on the previous books and TV shows and obviously other movies, is that they don't do a good job to sell me on why Christopher Robin is so special or so dear to these people. These creatures, I mean, not people. How do they do a good job of that?
Well, it becomes a problem solver for everybody. You know, he gets in there and he helps out everybody.
I mean, we do get that. The opening opens with, you know, like their farewell, right?
Yeah. And he's just like the answer. He's almost like their father. It's almost like a weird thing.
Yeah.
He's like father/best friend. It's like he's like a little bit older, the older brother almost like thing.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know everything, but he brings joy to everybody there, and he manages to help everybody because he thinks differently than all of them.
Yeah, I mean, which makes sense because they live in a topsy-turvy world.
Yeah.
I mean, Winnie the Pooh's answers alone for everything are both like a comedian gold mine for the 40s, and another is like really ridiculous.
Yeah.
But also kind of unique. I like his answers to a lot of the questions and concerns that Christopher Robin, adult version, was asking him. I thought it was funny. But so anyway, to continue on this, so it didn't bother you too much, I guess?
No.
Yeah, okay. It bothered me a little bit. I just didn't think they did a good job because I get it. To them, Christopher Robin is an old friend. I mean, they don't age a bit. Like, they don't look like they're aging a bit. But if they see him, it's like there's not. It's like a magic thing. Like, yeah, they know he's a bigger version of himself. Looks way different, but not really. It's almost like they can see his soul more or something like that. I don't know what. So I think it's funny. I just did a shortcut to that. But what do you think of the message of this movie or the plot of it? Like, it's very simple, obviously, but basically, he, ever since he left them, boarding school, a combination of boarding school, his father dying, World War II, I think, and then working to support his family has either made him almost forget that these things existed in his childhood, or made him
lose sight of who he was or what he wanted to be. And stuff
right.
Like
I guess
that.
I'm saying is that, did you buy any of that? And if not, why not?
Yeah, I mean, you buy it. I mean, I think they did a good... They put a big portion of the movie to sell that to us. Because they show us the war. They show him going to boarding school. They do, obviously, like, you know, speeds up and stuff.
Yeah.
But they spend a good portion of the movie just to show us that he embedded himself in this adult life to the max, right in front of you, to, what's it called? And he shunned everything else away.
Yeah.
And he left no room for it because I think it's a mix of his good nature person also. He always thinks he's doing good. He is. Mm-hmm. He's trying to, but he like closed-minded. He's closed-minded to the fact that him doing good in one aspect completely shuns the other portion of his aspect because he thinks that's already fine, which is his family, which is a big portion of his thing. Because, you know, his family's thing is fine. And he's trying to fix the stuff at work, you know, and things like that.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think it's played fine.
I almost feel like maybe this tree should have hopped in a little bit before than the last possible second to help him up. But also, like...
Well, it took Pooh, I think, that long to figure it out.
Yeah, well, also, it's funny that... obviously, the way Pooh gets in back in his life is that for the longest, he never went in through the door, the portal, let's say, between the woods where he's from and the real world, right? And he does it because he has to. But it's for a strange reason that isn't made 100% clear, and that is that his friends are missing. Piglet, the owl dude,
yeah.
Tigger, everyone. Eeyore, Ior. They're all missing. He's looking for them up and down. And so he has no choice but to go through that door, and then leads them to London, and that's how we meet again.
Mm-hmm.
This movie almost has like three plots, like one after the other, because that's the first one for Pooh and Robin. And then it eventually leads back into his life and what is he going to do with the rest of it, right? And it's all very, like, you know where it's going to go. It's not super... It's super obvious, I'm saying. It's not... It doesn't do any twists and turns. It's just how it gets there that lets you want to enjoy more or less. So with that in mind, is there anything else you want to talk about as far as pitching it to or possibly selling it to others if you want to? Or does this have like a particular audience only?
No, it's charming. It's a charming movie, and it's a heartwarming movie, and it does pick up. It does have its pace. So I would tell in my pitch, give it time.
Because
the beginning of the movie is very slow and very gloomy in comparison to the second half of the movie.
Yeah.
The second half of the movie is where you get everything, basically.
Yeah, and furthermore, I think you just reminded me of something. Is that one of the things I love about this movie, I actually like the first half of the movie more than the second half.
I bet you did.
What does that mean?
You're just more of a downer kind of guy.
What is it that, what, why? What does that have to do with anything?
That means you like being depressed, like Eeyore. That's why I figured you like Eeyore.
No, that's not a good answer. It's funny that. I was liking it because I like how the movie paced itself, like, much more methodically than I thought it was possible for a children's property. Nowadays, everything has to be fast-paced. This movie never reaches the levels of anything modern. But it does take its sweet time in a lot of scenes. Like, even at the end, with a lot of the sunset backgrounds, the scenery stuff. Like, the movie doesn't shy away from taking its time to let a situation sink into its audience for a while.
Yeah,
For example.
Yeah.
Which may be unattracting for children. But I almost think that this movie is not meant for them.
But it's not.
Yeah.
Because that's what the show was, or that's what the books are.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Anyway, it makes you rethink your options. Like, don't, you know, I get it's a Disney property, I guess. And it is Winnie the Pooh, which is like for kids, but it may not be for them.
I get what you're saying.
Because it's like you're
aiming. It's almost for the parents taking their kids to the
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, it's very strange, but yeah. Only for them. And why would they watch this movie, you know? Like,
so that when they took their kids to the movie and they didn't feel bad because they were like, why I took my kids to watch this movie? Yeah. And now they feel bad watching it.
I don't know. I mean, the only reason I was there is because you chose the movie. I would never have seen it probably.
Right.
Interesting stuff. Anyway, I found that interesting. So anyway, I feel like I do recommend it. Fuck you, I'm not a downer. So we should probably get into spoilers for this movie. What did you say? Yes?
Would you agree?
Okay, cool. Starting right now.
Does this world ever slow down?
Plane up time.
Hello, miss.
Hello.
Can I get you anything from the trolley?
I'd like 5 cups of tea, please.
Of course.
And some milk and sugar and... honey, please. Lots of honey.
And the game is called Say What You See. You first, Beckett.
Panic, worry, catastrophe.
Speed, danger,
recklessness.
Disgrace, shame, humiliation.
Well, that's one way to play it.
I didn't necessarily enjoy how the whole job thing was working out. Like,
well, it kind of wraps up in this nice bow tie.
No, it's extremely too nice.
Or of course,
it is. Like, you could have done it in a way where it was much simpler, less complicated.
Well, I actually thought the movie
less was last minute too.
Sure, sure. I thought the movie was going to end with him quitting his job and finding something else.
Right,
and giving like a good solution, quitting his job and being like, use my thing to like compensate for me not being there. To help out, you know, keep the job for everybody else. That's where you'll lose your keep your cut or whatever.
Right. But they have to keep it really, like, Back to the Future close. You know how Back to the Future is always the very last second that they get away with anything.
Right.
In all three movies.
Right.
This is like that. They try to do it really close. Like, they find the papers. Trigger, no, gave them important things to him, not the important papers. And then from there is a race against time, and he's already at the board meeting, and they still haven't left. I'm like, what is going on? Why are they cutting us so goddamn close?
Yeah.
And obviously it leads to, you know, the wife meeting the creatures and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Which is funny how that her answer, very loving answer. I got to call a doctor and got to make an appointment.
I'm going to make an appointment.
Don't worry. I'll help you. I'll support. It's a good answer. It's a good trial to see what your significant other would do in a crisis of mental faith situation like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, she reacted really well. I think the daughter parallels are interesting. It's like, because his father, you could tell from the beginning of the movie how his father didn't really show a lot of love for him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm sure he loved them, but I'm saying it didn't show it.
Right.
And he feels like he has to mimic his father by sending this girl to boarding school, which I guess led him to be what? Just a worker?
Yeah.
Which
is a good thing that the wife says it to him.
It's funny how not self-aware he is about something like that.
It's the 40s, man.
Is it the 40s still or is it 50s?
50s maybe, I don't know. Whatever.
I'm just
tomato, tomato.
Nope. Different stuff. Happened in those stuff.
It's 49 and the 50s is tomato, tomato.
Anyway. And Mycroft there is
I was wondering if you were going to call him
such
that.
A sniveling little bastard. You like, play a sniveling little motherfucker. And why would you put a golf ball in your breast pocket of your suit? Like, did you just really come off the game? Like, you were playing all weekend? Like, that's it? That's all you're doing is playing golf all weekend?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. And just, you couldn't find a place for just... That's some of the additions that didn't need to be. Like, you don't have to be this exaggerated. We know he's caught.
So. I hear you.
Although, if I was that father, I would just fire both, my son and Christopher Robin, because they're both fucking nutsos that are doing weird things. I'm like, good idea. I'm just going to... Don't come in anymore, you know? That would have been more fun. But yeah, anything you want to say or particularly, like, hit home about, like... Because I feel like the movie still feels...
Well, I think the movie does a really good job with the Huffalump thing, explaining that what he became, basically, is the thing he fought his whole childhood to not become. It's a downer, you know.
So it's not a real thing, but it is a real thing, but it's not a...
It's like a mythical thing.
Like
a,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like a creature that comes to you when you act that way, and then you become that creature or something, and you eat at the people who...
So what came first, the chicken or the egg, meaning that if Winnie the Pooh's friends hadn't gone missing, he wouldn't have found Christopher Robin again going through the door.
Yeah.
Did his friends go missing in order for him to reconnect with them?
That's what it felt like.
Because they weren't missing for no reason. They were missing because of this Huffalump. What do you call it?
Huffalump.
Huffalump.
Well, yeah, I think that's what happened. What happened is that they kind of explain it in the movie where...
Like, he's pretending to beat it, you mean?
Yeah. Well, not before that. But they're like, when the Huffalump's coming. Mm-hmm. And they were all hiding from it. Anyway, it was the weather vane that crashed or whatever.
Yeah.
It was making that noise. They were all hiding. So when Pooh goes look for them, doesn't find them. I'm like, oh, okay, well, because I can't find them. He doesn't really try to find them either. He just, they're not at their usual spots. Well, I guess I'm going to keep going. That's basically what he does.
Yeah.
But that's Pooh's nature to just.
So you don't think it was like a some sort of like a faith?
I mean, of course, it was the movie was trying to portray it as a faith kind of thing.
Okay.
Fate kind of thing, like we're here to help you out when you helped us out or whatever.
Yeah. So you're saying the Hufflepuff would have only attacked Christopher Robin because it's Christopher Robin's demons, so to speak?
Kind of like, yeah.
No, I thought of that too. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% on it, but I thought it was a nice bit of mysticalness in a movie that I know isn't mystical, but it very is fantastical. So it's a very strange feeling because right. It looks so real, obviously, and stuff bunny real. So I thought that was interesting. What else on this movie? I'm surprised at how much movement they gave some of these, because they look like they can't move a bunch. But they do have surprising agility sometimes. That's what they're able to do. Winnie Pooh is still slow as fuck.
Yeah.
And I love his honey scene when he's at Robin's apartment house or whatever it is.
Your stool doesn't seem to work that great. It's because it's not a stool.
Yeah, your ladder, I think.
Right, your ladder. He's like, well, that makes sense. Like,
it's really funny. How did he stand him? That's my, you know, it's almost like.
It's like your dear friend. How did you, like, he cursed under his breath or something?
I don't. I mean, he moved to, I'm trying to say Luke something about Luke.
Sounds like you don't have a dear friend. What are you talking about?
No, I have, but I have an ox friend. You get it?
I get what you did. That's just dumb.
That's a cat joke. What's wrong with that? Dumb. You're dumb. Anything else on Christopher Robin? I can't think of anything else, honestly.
No,
but
I mean, it's a heartwarming movie. It definitely picks up the second half picks up more and where the whole, like, action-y happens and, you know, coming to fix all the issues, realizations of things.
Yeah.
I found it funny. I found a lot of things funny in the movie. I still found it joyful. And I think that's what the movie tries to inspire is kind of joy. And it's kind of joy out of nothing also. Just joy of having, of enjoying nothing. And that's a good thing. And they mention in the movie a lot. Whereas, like, the best things come from nothing.
Like, oh, yeah. This,
it's like, the, you know, doing nothing you sometimes is what leads to the best.
The best something.
The best something. Right?
Something like that.
Yeah. So it's just like, it's interesting. Interesting.
Encouraging kids to be lazy.
It's encouraging to kids to...
No, I'm kidding. I'm just being throwing fire there.
Yeah.
But I get it. So that's the review for Christopher Robin. It's full of Robining. I'll tell you that right now.
Sure.
As far as Robin movies go, this is better than the King of Thieves or whatever his name is.
I don't know what you're talking about.
But, you know, Robin. Hood.
Oh.
Hood. That's what I meant to say.
Prince of Thieves,
is that?
I don't know.
That's not his
You're
name.
Asking the wrong
That's not his title either. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review our second film of the evening, which will be even harder for us to find what to talk about. And that is Netflix's original film that's out right now. It's Like Father. That's Like Father, not the beginning of a sentence. It is called Like Father. Stay with us.
What brings you on the cruise?
I was left at the altar a few days ago, and my dad, who I haven't seen since I was 5, showed up to my wedding, unannounced. The two of us got incredibly drunk that night, and I must have blacked out because...
Hi, sweetheart.
Oh, shit.
Somehow I dragged him onto this cruise that was supposed to be my honeymoon.
That's fucked up.
You're in the honeymoon suite.
Congratulations.
Ew, that's my dad. I'll be back in the office on Thursday. I'm leaving early because I don't need a vacation.
Rachel. Earth to Rachel. Rachel, how are you?
I'm fine.
A workaholic woman who is left at the altar takes her honeymoon trip anyway, joined by her overachieving father who left her mother because he believed his family was holding back his career. That's literally the description.
That's a little too much.
A little bit too much.
Right on the nose.
Like Father is a Netflix original directed by Lauren Miller Rogan. Written by Lauren Miller Rogan.
Seth Rogen's involved in that pairing?
I would assume so.
Okay.
starring Kristen Bell and Kelsey Grammer. Everybody else is just an extra. That's the way I'm going to see it.
Can I say real quick that we're going to open the floodgates for spoiling this movie for two reasons. One, the movie is quite short, quite predictable, and quite run of the mill. Would you guys argue against that?
Negative, Ghost Rider.
I need verbal, Ruff. This is not a fucking visual podcast.
That'd be
it. Could be if you paid $4.99 a month and supported our Patreon.
We don't have that.
Armander_Raphael.
Wow. Anyway, yes. So, so we're gonna just open it up now, and we're gonna spoil the whole movie as we go. Don't worry, you're not missing much. But if you are worried about it, by all means, watch the film and come back and listen to the review. So, Raph, before you tell us what you think of the movie, why did you pick this movie?
Because Netflix kept telling me to watch it.
So you're going to listen to what the Netflix overlord's going
to
say?
From time to time, I tend to listen to Netflix.
Huh. That's it.
I concur.
That's it. Yeah. You concur? Don't concur.
That's how I watched Icarus and a lot of other good stuff.
Yeah.
I am in the land of the blind. Okay. All right, cool. So what'd you think of this movie?
Let's see. I thought it was predictable. I mean, run of the mill. They do a twist that changes up the normal stuff, I guess. But other than that, I mean, not really. Nothing crazy. I just thought it was... I don't know. I've seen this movie before. Somewhere, sometime. I don't need to see it again. I thought it could be something extra. They just did it in a different scenery. So, yeah.
All right, Luke, let's go with you next.
I also like this. I also like Ralph. Think that it was a pretty predictable movie, run of the mill. Didn't really bring a whole much to it. I was hoping to get some at least good acting out of Kelsey Grammer. He had a couple good solid moments where I was like, all right, you know, he's really doing it. He's not just half-assing this for a paycheck. Mm-hmm. It was really good to see What's-Her-Face in a movie again. Kristen Bell. Have felt like I haven't seen her in a lot of things.
Since Veronica Mars.
Fanboys for me.
I was kidding. She's been in stuff.
And forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah, but Mars is the one I like. Anyway, continue.
I know. You know, you had your little thing with, what's his face?
Seth Rogen,
yes. Yeah, that was kind of a interesting thing, just to kind of put him in there.
That
would be a bigger character.
I think he is,
It was what it was.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think that in a way it's a good thing that a guy like Seth Rogen, a guy who looks like Seth Rogen, can get the beautiful starlet in his movies. Because it's so jarring, because I'm so used to Hollywood, you know, picking just the beautiful people to play their movies.
Right.
So, I shouldn't be.
Seth Rogen is beautiful.
Okay. You know what I mean.
Yes.
So my thoughts on this movie are that everything you guys said, however, for a split second, I thought that they were going to go with the ultimate twist, which is doing the not quite so predictable thing, meaning he feeds after her money. He is after her money. Like, her worst fears about it, what he was doing when she found out about their bankruptcy. At the third act, that final twist you were referencing to. Or that, you know, that Gabe was his partner in life and in business. So he was gay. Like, if he was those actual things. Then I would say the movie has balls on top of not having any. So that's the only thing I think that could have saved me from this movie if kind of went bonkers in that direction. I think if it tried, a little of anything. Even style in the directing... would have been fun. But you're right, Luke. Kelsey Grammer gets three moments, and then that's basically it. And Kristen Bell doesn't get much, actually. She doesn't get to stretch anything.
The only one scene that I would say that she gets is when she's at the waterfall and she has to basically cry on a point. And that's probably her only time. Other than that, yeah, there's mainly Kelsey Grammer does get more chances to show his chops, per se. Because in this movie, what's her name? Kristen Bell just has to act like she's been hurt and a bitch and stuff like that, which she does a good job.
Yeah, I feel like this movie is like a project for just... I think it's just an excuse for people to hang out. Like, these guys are all friends. You've seen them in tons of movies together. Like, the guy who plays Kristen Bell's boss, he's clearly in tons of movies with, you know, the gay couple as the actors, as well as Seth Rogen and those people, right? Those, you know, they all hang around with each other. And the Judd Apatow people. I think they just all wanted to make a movie. He's like, hey, I kind of want to make a movie. Oh, you have a script? Sure. And I think they just want to have fun.
I'll make one.
Going on set together and making this movie, but not really for anyone or anyone of this decade that could enjoy it. Like, that's how I feel. So that's how it feels. It feels...
It's what Adam Sandler does with all of his current movies.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen any of those recent stuff, but from what I heard, it sounds like he's just hanging out with his old buddies, just shooting whatever they want to shoot. Like, it's some, but that one, like, I guess, is more raunchier, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And they don't care about any plot. Like, this one at least cares about its own plot, even though it's really extremely predictable, as we said three times already, a piece. Yeah, and I definitely don't know what else to say about the movie. Other than the performances, which we touched on, like even that scene where the waterfall scene, it's like there's a ton of scenes like that where they feel like they have to include something comedic to break the tension. I'm like, let your actors breathe it out. Why don't you let them live with the awkwardness of having a moment afterwards? Like, have the moment afterwards of awkwardness. You don't have to jump off a waterfall and put happy music on right away. Give it a second. You know, like, I felt like the movie was doing that all the time. I'm like, it's pulling its punches, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it was kind of annoying. So it took me two sittings to finish this movie.
Me too.
So.
Same here, actually.
And it's only like 90 minutes, barely. Yeah. So, I'm sorry, guys. We don't have a great positive review of this film. Anything else we want to say at all before carry on?
It's cute. It's heartwarming. It's that, you know, it's great popcorn flick, you know, that type of deal. It's not going to, you know, revolutionize cinema or anything like that.
It's not great. That's the thing. It's not great. It's an okay popcorn flick. Like, had you tried a new flavor on your popcorn, you'd probably remember, oh yeah, I tried a new flavor on the popcorn on Like Father. I remember that because that was a new flavor on my popcorn.
Yeah.
And that I normally...
I got a Hummer during this movie.
Right, I got a Hummer during this movie, exactly.
So something like that, you know?
Yeah. Wow. You get it.
That's why I remember the second Harry Potter movie so well.
That's why you remember the second Harry Potter
movie? Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
I still can't tell you what happens in Chicago, the movie.
Yeah, that's another one. I think that's it for our review for Like Father.
So we're done.
So Like Father, like podcasters, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, get it there? Because Kelsey Grammer takes a long break, a 30-year run from parenting. Get it? Anyway, when we come back, we'll review our last film of the evening, which is Spike Lee's latest film, Black Klansman. Stay with us, please.
There's never been a black cop in this city. We think you might be the man to open things up around here.
Hello, this is Ron Stallworth calling.
Well, who am I speaking with?
This is David Duke.
Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. That David Duke?
God, last time I checked. What can I do for?
Well, since you asked, I hate blacks. I hate Jews, Mexicans, and Irish.
Italians and Chinese. But my mouth to God's ears, I really hate those black rats. And anyone else, really, that doesn't have pure white Aryan blood running through their veins.
I'm happy to be talking to a true white American.
God bless white America.
Ron Stallworth, an African-American police officer from Colorado, successfully manages to infiltrate the local KKK with the help of a white surrogate who eventually becomes head of the local branch. This movie is directed by Spike Lee, written by four other people, based on the book by Ron Stallworth.
Right.
Written by Charlie Wachow, David Rabanowitz, Kevin Wilmot, and Spike Lee. So there's a lot of writers, a lot of people in this, but overall directed by him. Starring John David Washington, Adam Driver, Laura Harrier, and Topher Grace, along with Alec Baldwin, whom I did not see in this movie, and other people.
Yep.
So, first impressions, I guess I should go to me, but we're going to go with Oscar, since technically I started with first impressions and Christopher Robin.
But I didn't.
Yeah, I know, but you started the other one. Or you didn't start the other one, actually. I started both. I could have picked anyone, but I picked Oscar.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, folks, welcome to the racially charged happy hour here. Let's see. I think this movie is... I saw it today, by the way. A mere 5 hours ago or so. It is fantastic. I really, really enjoyed all the emotions that this movie stirred up in me. I like the sometimes subtle, sometimes not so goddamn subtle at all. Conflictions and comparisons to today's climate politically and with people or with social media, whatever people talk about. I like how this compares to even stuff more in the history of our country. And I like how it's fucking hilarious sometimes. I also love how people who were watching it with me in the theater didn't know when to laugh, when not to laugh. And I thought that was funny, which made me laugh more. So it made me laugh. But I had a lot of fun with this movie. I had a lot of fun thinking about this movie in the moments and then after I saw it for like a few hours after. So yeah, I totally dug it a lot. I recommend it for virtually everybody. So that is my initial thoughts or whatever, 2 cents.
Luke?
Okay, I also really like this movie as well. Definitely a step up from Chirac, because we all know how much I disliked that one. I also did see it 5 hours ago. And I actually had it in a really packed theater, and it was a very diverse crowd. So, I mean, I pretty much laughed at every single time, and there was only a couple times where I think I laughed and no one else did. But
not shocking.
That was me a lot.
Yeah. But, yeah. Really good movie.
Well.
Definitely going to be one I'm going to probably pick up and re-see again.
Yeah, it's definitely a rewatch for me. A definite rewatch. Chirac wasn't that much of a rewatch for me, but I do want to rewatch it. I just didn't want to rewatch it so soon. So, like, now is a good time because it's been a while. I'm going to go. Quick disclaimer. I missed the first 5-10 minutes of this movie, I think. 5 minutes, I want to say.
Blasphemy.
Blasphemous. I was running late for the movie theater. And
you running late? To the movie, never.
And when I got to the theater, you shut your whore mouth. And when I got to the theater, the guy was like, oh no, the movie still has previews in it. And then I walked in and I was like, I'm pretty sure I missed like 5-10 minutes of this movie.
Anyways, sucks.
Anyways, I got... My theater had a completely different reaction where no one laughed, except for me chuckling at sometimes along with Greg. That I heard anyways. I didn't hear any laughter, like out loud laughter.
Me either.
So, but yeah. And I didn't see anybody else sitting in the front, but all the way up top. So I didn't see anybody. That being said, I did like the movie. I thought it was, I thought it hit the dialogue was chosen very carefully in this movie to mimic a lot of, and I don't know if it was, obviously it's done on purpose, but I don't know if it was chosen very carefully or if it was just literally like some of the stuff is verbatim or some of the stuff is whatever the case is to mimic what is said nowadays with our current climate and specifically our current president. So that I caught on in the movie right away. I also did just watch the movie like 5 hours ago, so we're all on the same page. We saw this movie.
We didn't see it together?
No, we should have.
Yeah.
You saw it like 8 hours ago. I saw it for real like 5 hours ago.
I don't know what time it is.
Yeah, it's 10 o'clock.
Oh.
Anyways, that being said, I mean, I like what they're talking about. I like what they bring up in it. I do find some of the parts really funny. And how it's brought up. So yeah, I had a good time. I definitely want to watch the movie again. I have some mixed feelings about the ending, but maybe if I'd seen the beginning, I might have different feelings about the ending.
It does bookmark it
just from what I'm seeing, from what I understanding of it. So cause I did feel out of place for me. So other than that, we can start the actual review now.
So I feel like a movie like this is very similar to what I feel our first Reformed interview is going to be, review is going to be like, or other movies like Annihilation, for example. I think what these movies have in common is that the subject matter is bigger than the movie in a way, or they do such a good job that you can't help but talk about the actual subject matter. It's like, Luke, you and I did The Bleeding Edge last time. We didn't review the movie. We just talked about its contents. Right. Yeah, and you know, giving our opinions on how we feel on this very shitty situation. There's one aspect of a life that's going on right now. I feel like this movie makes me want to do the same, but at the same time, I feel like the only way I can talk details is comparing all the subtle, sometimes not so subtle scenes or interactions that the actors have with each other in The Black Klansman. So it is not quite as documentary, where we won't talk about the movie at all, but the movie uses these characters as an analog to talk about today. Very well, by the way. Spike Lee must have, I don't know how he cranked it out. I mean, that probably took him an extra year longer than other filmmakers, but he cranked it out really well. And like you said, Ralph, very clever way of using spot-on dialogue that mimics some of the newsreels that we've been watching over the last year and change.
Yeah.
And he does such a good job that it's both funny enough to laugh and almost too real not to laugh. And he walks that line sometimes in the movie, and especially after he makes that cold call to the KKK classifieds ad, and then the ball starts rolling. You know, we get that also with the Black Panther-ish. It's not the Black Panther, but is there ish version of that whole speech thing, which is very good, by the way. They clearly got someone that looked like MLK, and you know, they did all this stuff, and it's really very poetic. And it's almost like they're saying, it's almost like Spike Lee is saying.
Well, it's the guy who played Dre, and what's it called?
Yeah, he played Dre, right? Dre. Yeah, I didn't remember that. But he did such a good job. I think he might have emulated him the way he was speaking and the way his gesticulating, you know. But anyway, I think one of the many lessons that from this movie that we can extrapolate is maybe how history repeats itself. And what's worse is that history is repeating itself so fast, and we're forgetting just as fast about it. Like, usually it takes maybe a couple centuries or even a millennia for our history to repeat itself on something so awful or something so great that before we have to relearn those lessons again. But this one's happening only with a 30-year mark difference in this particular movie, not to mention other particular cases that are even shorter. And I think that's wonderful. And I mean, wonderful as in, like, fucked up, but, like, wonderful to think about. You guys get what I'm putting down here? Like, I think we should review maybe about what the movie's trying to be.
No, I get you.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is that people that are still alive are going through the same thing. People that are still alive are going through the same thing that they did, you know, in the past and 40, 50 years ago, because it's not 30 years ago anymore. But that's mimics nowadays, because we're almost in 2020.
It definitely doesn't feel like that to me.
It doesn't feel like we're in 2020, almost, but we are. We're in 2018. We're almost there.
Like, no, I know. But when I said that, I said it in my mind of living in the 90s.
I know you did. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's why I clarified for you.
Which is, I feel like Spike Lee's best decade. 80s, 90s.
80s, 90s, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Luke, I guess, what? How do you think, what do you feel about my approach so far on this movie? Or what yours is?
I don't know.
I'm trying to think. You don't know what? Are you racist? Let's just ask the question now. Are you racist?
Negative.
Negative. Okay, good.
Yes, I am racist.
Wait, aren't you not in the whitest island ever? No, I'm kidding.
Actually, it's quite opposite.
I know. It's based on the stories you told me.
Like I said, like, half my theater was... Actually, I think more than half was like very affluent African-American people. And then you had a couple old white people. And then me.
Yeah. All right, so... What was the thing that got... That maybe hooked you the most about what this movie's trying to do?
Well, for me, mainly it was just the actual story of it, like how a black cop infiltrating the Ku Klux Klan and having to use a white guy to portray him. It's just crazy. It's something you would think would never happen in real life, but here it is. It has happened.
It kind of reminded me of Sorry to Bother You, where they have the thing
still
of the white voice. So they do the whole white voice thing. This is a similar thing in the movie.
Oh, there's two movies within a month of each other where they use the white voice to get along and get away with things.
Exactly.
But Sorry to Bother You, not only is it about more today's stuff, but he uses it for selfish reasons.
Yeah.
And to get... better way of life, in a way. I mean, it leads to better... I mean, yes.
I would say this is a selfish reason, too, but...
Yes, it is selfish reason, but we'll find out later, but it becomes more altruistic,
of course,
I guess.
Of course it does.
But you're right.
It's called...
How rare is that?
Yeah.
It's called code switching.
Sure.
I think... one thing, it is something to say for sure that we should definitely marvel at the fact that this movie is... based on real events. Like, I haven't seen the interviews yet with the real Ron Stallworth and Spike Lee together, but I know that there's a few out there already, so I can't wait to, like, check them out. But also, much like... So, I guess, since it's hard for us to find out where to begin on this, what do we think about Ron Stallworth as a leading man and his viewpoint and how his viewpoint leads to both disastrous... consequences and also positive actions in the movie itself, like, because he's not an everyman, but he's almost an everyman. And I think that the movie does a good thing about giving him this first assignment about hooking up with the local college black chapter, and also then obviously the KKK, which is the real story, at the same time. And I think it's no coincidence, obviously, that Spike Lee is trying to say more than just like, blacks need to be liberated, whites are racist. He's saying more than that by comparing these two often simultaneously, like four times in the movie. He's trying to say something more than just those two things. What do you guys feel like he's trying to do, and how do you feel about this leading man and how he carries through himself throughout the movie? Let's start with Luke.
Okay, well, right off the bat, the first time you see him is he goes up to the police department, and he's getting the interview kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And this guy's just like a total straight shooter, like never did anything like wrong in his life, that kind of thing. And they're asking him, when he's gonna go for like the first assignments as undercover. They're like, what do you do if somebody hands you a joint or somebody puts a gun in your face? And he gives you like the straight up like book version of what he's supposed to do. I thought, shit, they're going to show him in that situation, and he's going to do the complete opposite. But no, this guy is like a legit straight shooter. And I was just not expecting that.
Oh, you thought he was. Oh, you thought he was fronting, and right. thought that we were going to see him cracking, but he never did. Okay.
Right. So that gave me a lot on his character, like right off the beginning. Like, I guess I went off like what other movies have done, and this movie just did not go along with it, which is amazing. It gives you like a real feel for the actual character, and you know his mentality and how he carries himself.
I both agree and haven't thought of that. I like that.
I'm good for one good thought a day, so there it goes.
Oh, that's it? All right, bye, Luke.
All right, signing off now.
No.
What else you got?
Ralph.
All right, you're going to have to repeat this question for me.
I mean, I ask a bunch
for the
of
listener.
Stuff.
Repeat the question for
the listener. Right. Wait, what I'm asking for is that do you guys feel like Ron Stallworth is a good leading man to hang this balance between?
Okay, so right. Yes, and I'll tell you why. For the reason that he is not your, I think he's more of your everyman. He's not. He's the guy in the middle. He's not the guy who. Is far left. He's not the guy who's far right, right? He's stuck in the middle. I think he's more like what we think or how we feel, or at least how I feel. Most of America is. Most of America doesn't lean all the way to the right. Most of America doesn't lean all the way to the left either. But we fall somewhere in the middle where we wanna show support and responsibility and stuff towards our cops, right, and towards the jobs we do and individualism itself, right? But at the same time, we also know that there are bad apples in organizations like that. Same thing with like the KKK, right? That he does a good job of exploiting. There's obviously good people in the chapter, right, who don't want to do crimes, and we have those people, right, from in the movie. And then we have racist people in the police department who do more harm towards the police force than they do good, right, for being racist. But then we have the people that fall everywhere in the middle where they don't really care, or it's not as black and white for them as it is for the people with the Black Power movement. His girlfriend. It's not as black and white for him as it is for her, because he's trying to find the middle ground, and he explains it to his girl what's her name in the movie? I should probably pull that up because I have it in front of me.
I mean, you saw it 5 hours ago. I saw it 8 hours ago.
Oh my god! Is that what you're gonna do with me? To Patrice.
Patrice. Okay.
Yeah. So to Patrice. He explains it to Patrice that he's trying to do it his way. He's trying to do it for him because he's already a cop, and that's what he's always wanted to be. And he knows he can do good from the inside, and she doesn't believe that. That she doesn't believe that can happen. And he obviously makes an impact from the movie's outcome and everything. So our main character... for Ron, he does a good job of being this kind of like middle person, of being what a cop should be, but also as a black person, what a black person for an activist, a black activist should be or should do to help his community in that aspect. So he does fit the role really well to kind of bridge both worlds, even though we see more. We don't see that as we see that in throughout as the moviegoers, but through the movie they don't see that as his actions. You get what I'm saying? I think the only other people who see that are his immediate colleagues at work, and everybody else is almost blind to it.
Yeah, like his other Ron Stallworth, like the other Ron. There's two Rons to make one Ron.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Everyone here is. Knows and is a fan, I assume, of Do the Right Thing, right? Spike Lee's first big effort back in the 80s. Everyone knows it?
Of course.
Luke?
Yes, I've seen it.
Okay. So I think almost this one is like writ larger. So like I think this movie does an extremely good job of giving you exactly what Roth was talking about. Like, for example, like the head of the chapter for the Klansmen in on that side of the track, so to speak, he has his opinions that he believes fervently, but he wants to protest through marching, through these things, and not the extreme version of his clearly dumber friends, other or dumber people in the chapter, right? And then you get the naivete of people being strong-willed, not being able to look at something like, so when Ron says to that head of the president of the college, black thing, what's her name again? We just said it. Anyway.
Patrice.
How she doesn't, like, look beyond black and white. For her, it is black and white. If there's a white person, that's the enemy no matter what. And then there's the police station, which is almost like a different race in itself because of the family aspect. Because there's a scene when they're talking to the other two detectives, the two friends with Ron, and he's talking about that racist cop. And how, oh, yeah, he shot a black kid last year or something like that. And he says, like, why don't you guys do something about it? Like, oh, you want to be the rat? And you want to go and tell them yourself and get him busted on it and stuff? I'm like, in the end, we're family, and he is a knucklehead, but we have to deal with him. Because they see it differently. They're blue. They're neither black or white. And that's almost like him starting up in it. It's like the problem with that racist cop and the dumbass is that he doesn't see himself as blue because he sees black and white with Ron Stallworth. He has a problem with him being blue.
Right.
And that's why he can't separate the two. But his other car friends can separate the two. So that's why they're all blue to them. And I think that's a great dynamic. That's a great fucking thing going on there. And it's doing it while making jokes, while saying other things. For example, like when his, that actor's name from Girls and shit? The other Ron? Adam Driver. Philip. Yeah, Adam Driver. Adam Driver's character is super fascinating. He has a few revelations of himself, like how you can almost tell the second in the movie where he goes from this undercover assignment goes from being a job to being a crusade, which is something they have a conversation about. You can even tell where it's coming up, where he's being sick of it, sick of the very same stuff that he's undercover for. Like, he's actually letting it get to him. I almost thought it was going to be a plot point that was going to let him get to him too much, that was going to get him killed. Luckily, it didn't happen that way. But I think a different movie would have done that. Because it was getting to him. He was hating these people. This is not a job anymore. These people hate him for being a Jew, something he's never practiced a day in his life. But that's all they need to hate him. Right?
And it's funny
he's understanding.
Because...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because, and also, you know, he started thinking about his heritage and things that he would have never thought of. It was a huge revelation for him. And it's, but oh my, when he started talking, like the hate spewed out of him, it was crazy. And at times I thought he was going to break character, but he even went to like a more vile, like, degree just to fit in. Like, when you talk about, what do you mean, that the Holocaust wasn't a thing? He's like, what are you talking about? It's the best thing to ever happen. And I was like, holy shit.
Right. That scene was crazy. He had to play it off somehow. Yeah. And I was like, boy, don't let him get to you. Yeah. This fucking asshole in his basement with his little machine. Oh, that scene pissed me off. That's one of the scenes that really pissed me. I did not find anything funny in there, in that particular scene. But I can see how people can make it see it funny, because it's kind of works both ways a little. You know what that scene reminded me of? Adam Driver's role in this movie reminds me of Christoph Waltz's role in Django Unchained. Do you guys remember his role? Where he plays this German bounty hunter, right? And in the end of the movie, towards the end, spoiler alert for, 7-year-old movie, Leonardo DiCaprio's plantation, right? And he's recollecting how savagely these white guys killed this black slave who had tried to run away by sticking dogs at him, eating him alive, and he was watching it. He's remembering it. And that leads into him not giving a shit about his own life in the process of this mission that they're trying to do, because he can't handle the brutality of this racist shit. He couldn't handle it anymore, so he got himself killed. I feel like Adam Driver's role, or not role, but his character is really similar to him, where like at some point he cracked. And he just couldn't take it anymore. he was beyond that pale, you know. And Adam Driver, luckily, did not get to that point, but, you know, obviously Christoph Waltz's character did, and he even apologized right before he had to kill the plantation owner. He just couldn't stand him alive anymore, which I really love that scene, by the way. Anyway, it reminded me of that. But what else you guys want to delve into? I mean, there's so many fucking conundrums and reflections.
What do you think? Does Ron deserve the leading? Does he?
Oh, good. Yeah, okay. I think he is great because he's a straight shooter every man that this movie, and almost like it's saying like our society sorely needs. It's almost like every practical choice that everyone should be making out here today or there back then in the 70s, is this person. The voice sounds like Ron. People who know individually what the right thing to do and what the wrong thing to do about being racist, meaning don't be racist, or being violent, meaning don't be violent, they know this. The voice is Ron to everyone out there who's practical or who is not biased, let's say. I'm not just saying racist. There's many other forms of biasness that are worse. I think this movie does a good job of showing him to be that every man, like our voice. Not our Jiminy Cricket or anything, but like something like our voice in a way. Because he has to be convinced, and he has to convince us that it's okay to be convinced in many ways. Because some of it does lean back and forth in certain ways. And it does become a crusade for him because he cold calls the KKK one day. You know? It's just amazing how far it goes. Just as it's amazing how far Trump managed to get here, right?
Yeah.
It's very similar. It's fucked up and very similar and also very funny, and we kind of have to laugh at our own stupidity and our own terrible choices, but this movie is daring us to do that because we clearly have made terrible choices recently. So, and that's it. Me too, obviously. And so
like
I don't know.
Hashtag
that's
me
how
too?
I feel about it. Not that one, but that too.
Okay.
I'm sure I didn't do enough. I didn't do anything, actually. Right? But does that track with you guys?
It does. I mean, it kind of mixed what me and Luke said.
Yeah. I don't know where else to proceed from here. Anything you guys want to bring up that you guys want to definitely have been thinking about lately? I know we all saw it today, but anything
well,
you're still
I think
processing?
There's one part in the movie, leave yours on. No, just leave it there. You're good. One part of the movie where Ron Sargent comes up to him. Not the chief, the sergeant, right?
Yeah.
He comes up to him and he tells him, he's like, well, what are you, like, you need to know that the Klan, right, like, their goal is, like, to get, like, this Duke person to up to, like, the White House kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Ron's like, it's never going to happen. Like,
right.
You're crazy. And he goes, you're crazy for not thinking that's not true.
No, he says he calls him naive.
He calls him naive, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big naivety, very naive of him, because that's... Well, we want to think that's not how the world would work.
I mean, that's what I thought minutes before that motherfucker got the podium.
Yeah. That's exactly what I thought too.
Yeah.
But we want to think that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big part of the message in the movie.
Huge.
that I took
Huge.
Out from the movie,
because no.
it told America that we were naive. Because I see Ron as us. I see Ron. I almost see him as myself. Where I don't fall. I fall in the middle with him. I don't fall left. I don't fall right. You know, I fall somewhere in the middle, and I make my way through that, and I make choices through whatever, you know, whatever influences I get and whatever I can take, you know, process and stuff. So, yeah, I felt naive as well because I felt like, well, the system's going to work it out. There's no way we let this go through.
Mm-hmm.
But there's obviously, you know, agendas and stuff. So,
yeah. It makes you feel like an adult, but also doesn't let you off the hook by any means. But I think the movie does let you laugh about it a bit, because Ron Stallworth at the end of the movie succeeds, and then but they also hang a question: does he really succeed? Because obviously we're living today, we didn't succeed yet. It's almost like the work is never done, and it's kind of conflicting it in a way, and it's making it complicated with your own emotions because it is blaming you. It is should be blamed. But it's also like trying to make a joke out of it, but also making you not forget.
Well, what's funny is that he succeeds in the way that the Klan doesn't succeed in their mission.
Yes.
Right? But we know he doesn't succeed because we're in spoilers. I'm assuming we're good.
Yeah.
I mean, okay.
Yeah,
let's go into spoilers.
Have we said any?
Not really.
Yeah, how about we call it spoilers now, just in case? We haven't said anything about the later half, right?
But no.
But yeah. This is called spoilers.
We've hinted very closely, though.
Right, okay, yeah. Spoilers for this Black Klansman starring right now.
They were trapped, but that Peckerwood had a gun in my face. And he was an ass hair away from pulling the trigger.
And he didn't.
But he could have. And then I would have been dead. For what? Stopping some jerk-offs from playing dress-up?
Flip, it's intel.
Well, I'm not risking my life to prevent some rednecks from lighting a couple sticks on fire.
This is the job. What's your problem?
That's my problem. For you, it's a crusade. For me, it's a job. It's not personal, nor should it be.
Why haven't you bought into this?
Why should I?
Because you're Jewish, brother. The so-called chosen people. You've been passing for a wasp. White Anglo-Saxon Protestant, cherry pie, hot dog, white boy. That's what some light-skinned black folks do. They pass for white. Doesn't that hatred you've been hearing the Klan say, doesn't that piss you off?
Of course it does.
Then why are you acting like you ain't got skin in the game, brother?
Rookie, that's my fucking business.
It's our business. I'm going to get you your membership card so you can go to the cross burning and get in deeper with these guys.
Right, partner?
Do-do-do. Okay, so yeah, so he was saying Ron succeeds in foiling the Klan's plan, right? Barely.
The C4 thing, yeah, and that's because she fucked up. Really.
That's because she fucked up, exactly. Yeah. So in reality, he didn't really succeed. But he doesn't succeed because he still doesn't get his girl. He doesn't get her to change her mind about what he tries to do,
mm-hmm.
And. Obviously, nobody in the Klan changes their mind about, you know, black people,
right.
Whatever. Especially Duke, because he's been talking to this person who's, you know, who's black the whole time, and he thinks he's white because he knows the difference on the phone.
Because of the R's.
Yeah.
That's how they pronounce the R. That was hilarious.
Yeah, that's how they pronounce the R. Yeah, that was really funny. I was like, which of the many things are they going to say this time?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Which, obviously, those are the funny parts in the movie.
Right.
Meant to be funny.
Yes, definitely. Hey, even his, like, fuck you, it's goodbye phone call. Yeah. Perfect. Thank you. I enjoyed that. You were saying?
No, I was done.
That's you're done.
He didn't
succeed.
Yeah. Like,
bless you.
What I'm saying is that he didn't even succeed in... you said that he doesn't succeed. I go, you said he succeeds, but, he, you know, that's the only difference
right,
in the movie.
It's like,
but I say he doesn't really succeed.
He's like, heroes won the day, but not the week or the year. It's like one of those things.
Yeah, but barely.
The battle, not the war kind of thing, right?
Yeah. It's almost like we dodged the bullet, but we still got knocked back by the explosion.
But the clip is still half full or something.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know why I'm combining so many things.
It's okay.
But I will say, though, one lovely thing about that last scene they Patrice and Ron have together in that apartment was that he still doesn't convince her. She basically says, can't be with you, bro. Right? She doesn't say it like that, but I think she says it something like that.
Yeah.
And then the knock on the door comes. They both get their guns. They both reach out. There's no one there. But across the long hallway, you see the burning cross. And clearly, the chapter, the local KKK chapter, is burning the cross during the ritual, which is the ominous looming sight of the future coming. Don't let it pass your sight. It's almost like the long hallway is the decades coming. And that's how I feel anyway. I'm sure a lot of people can read it many different ways. But I feel like
I thought it was
something like that. What?
I thought it was from Family Guy, the lowercase t for trust.
No, that's South Park.
Is that South Park?
No, that was Family Guy.
Maybe it was both.
Wait, t for trust or...
Yeah.
Or the plus sign for addition.
No.
No? Okay. I know you were saying a joke. I thought you were going to get something.
South Park does something very similar.
I'm sure they do.
I believe it.
Yeah, that's why. And so the movie has an ending after that where I guess you might have some mixed emotions, Ralph. Why don't you talk about how the ending happens?
Well, the ending ends with clips of last year,
mm-hmm.
Up to closest
the
to
the Tiki Torch
year.
Thing.
The Tiki Torch thing, the march, the running over of the people and protesting of the
one.
LGBTQ. Yeah. LGBTQ, whatever.
How many letters?
I'm out of... Yeah, I don't know. You know, the cars running people over. Basically, things happening since Donald Trump has been in office.
Yeah.
Since 2016, basically. So, and it's stuff like that. So it ends like that. And I was like, oh, I thought we got this message in the movie already.
Like, oh, I see.
So in for me, because I didn't see the beginning, I thought we got this message in the movie. I thought we got it through the point of the dialogue is very similar to what we get from Trump speaking. Mm-hmm. The dialogue is the stuff with the Klan is very similar to the stuff that happened with the tiki torches thing. That's the first thing that came through my mind. The stuff that's going on through today, you know, where it's just a lot of hate, a lot of Black Lives Matter marches with the Black right. Power movement, stuff like that. So I thought it was like already, I thought it was already part of that. So okay. I didn't need
you're what right. happened in the extra nail,
the extra, on the yeah, exactly,
or the extra hammer, whatever.
No, this was like making sure this is. Oh, in case if you didn't know, this is exactly what it is.
This is what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Right. In case if you didn't know what we were talking about, this is what I'm talking about. Yeah. That's what the ending was, and I was like, well, we already knew that, and if people who were watching this movie didn't get that from this movie, then they weren't watching the movie. Like, yeah. That's the way I saw it.
Okay.
Luke, that's my interpretation.
Luke, how do you feel about that ending that Ralph described?
Nail in the coffin type of thing. It really just brings it home. Like, especially with the whole thing.
Did it bring it home? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like a nice bringing it home like thing, like, because, you know, you have like these like neo-Nazi guys just marching, you know, down the streets, doing their chants, and then you have like Trump saying, you know, oh, there was bad people on both sides, but, you know, some of the sides, you know, some of the people were really good people, and like still trying to defend it. And it's like, no, you can't really do that. We had a war about this. They lost. You can't be for Nazis.
You just can't be for Nazis.
Right. I mean, the whole world was involved.
So my question to you, Luke, is that it seems like we're both, and me too, but I believe the same thing. So we all agree on the purpose of its ending. Now, but for Ralph, it was too much. Did you feel it was too much or just enough for you? Luke.
One more time.
Did you feel that the very ending about, you know, the current stuff, the 2017 March stuff, was it too much, like, for Ralph, or was it just enough for you?
I think it was enough. Like, I think also it made a couple people in the theater were like, I don't know if it was just because it was hot, but it seemed like they were like wiping away like tears or something. But again, that theater had no AC, so it could have been either or.
Maybe it is. They're all crying.
It could have been.
It's possible that it's an emotional, cathartic moment for people, for maybe people who are more closely remembering those recent events of last year, Ralph. Maybe it's supposed to be more emotional than it is, like a hitting the head.
I think the movie would have prepped me for it had I seen the beginning, because I would have totally said, "There's a bookend to this."
Well, also Spike Lee. Also, he always does that.
Yeah, I know. And I knew it was gonna come. I just didn't know.
Sure, I guess the opening song.
Yeah,
crazy.
I know. I knew it was gonna come. I just didn't know like what are we gonna get. And I was like, oh, we got all this. Like,
yeah. I see your point. You're right, and you really should have seen that beginning. He does have a big, very powerful bookends. I mean, Alec Baldwin is blowing out with the racism, and obviously the awesome thing. Did we say this on the show already, or if we said this off air about how it's wonderful casting Alec Baldwin because of his playing Trump on SNL recently? It's like a great duality because he's the same actor.
Yeah, we didn't say that on there.
No, we didn't say that on the air. Well, I'm saying it now. That opening was awesome on many levels. Likewise with the whole Gone with the Wind angle, and but about the ending, another completely different thing for me is that it reminded. So what it did for me is that, have you seen the 13th, Ava DuVernay's documentary about the prison system with African Americans culture? Okay,
I have.
Okay, it's on Netflix. Remember the ending with the upside down, which is a very bad sign, patriotically speaking, American flag at the end, and it turns to black.
Well, it says America's in distress.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Yeah, I know what it means. I'm saying it's upside down and it turns to black and white, right? Just like Ava DuVernay's poster art for the 13th. Yes. I think it is an homage to it because it's bringing home something from history. In this case, this is a fictional world setting of a comedy, but in Ava DuVernay's, it's a documentary about the history of all that shit from slavery ended till now. And it brings it home at the end with very similar stats about today. And I think the movie is like, I think Spike Lee is giving it a little bit an homage and doing the same, at least the same attempt or the same trick, not trick, the same play as DuVernay's movie does. I think that's where I think I got a little bit of whiff of that.
Okay.
And also, like, I think I think it hits it just enough home, because I think after the insanity of this movie, people could come away with halfway through the movie, let's say, of not believing the reality of this film. You know, not just based on a true story angle, but how real this is and how ridiculous that this happened. But furthermore, how ridiculous that we let the other major thing happen, and this is why. And it hits you with a hammer. It's like a cold water rush at the end. Like, you were having fun. Now, let's get real. And that's why I would have probably put it to 2, because I think at the end, the audience needs that cold water at the end. That's how I felt about it. Mm. But I can understand. I mean, I definitely got all those points already before that happened.
Right.
So I'm with you on that. Yeah. Anything else we want to say on this movie at all?
I do. Mm-hmm. I want to bring up Spike Lee himself, the director, which is...
such a fascinating guy.
He is. And I want to bring up something that he's been doing. I think he's always done it, but that he's been doing, I think, more lately. And it was that one scene when they're walking, and just when Ron and what was her name?
Patrice
are just walking, and they're talking about the movie they just saw, and they bring up all the old movie reference of Shaft and this.
Oh yeah, yeah,
really super cool, fly. Really cool Spike Lee thing.
Yeah,
a moment where he kind of credits them. He does it in his show. What's it called?
She's got to have it
with all the music.
Yeah.
He does it, and he's done it in other movies as well, where they mention a movie, they make a reference, and he pulls up the poster or something to show you, you know, like what they're thinking in their head, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
And it kind of gives us a visual representation of what they're talking about. So it helps us out.
Mm-hmm.
But he only does it for you know, that one moment.
Yes.
But that's a big thing for Spike Lee.
Yeah, it is. It is a Spike Lee-ism. Yeah. One of my favorite. It's not a montage, but it's almost like a real life montage,
mm-hmm.
of the scenes where the Black Chapter is at their sorority house or wherever they are. I don't know what they call it. And they bring then that older Black gentleman to talk to them, give speeches and stories about how it was way worse in the past before the Civil Rights Movement. And
the comparisons. And he's talking, yeah.
The comparisons between that and the KKK.
Well,
oh my God,
that's
insane.
Great.
That was a great
they even
scene.
Talk about they talk. He talks about Birth of a Nation and what happened.
Watching Birth of a Nation.
Exactly.
And it made me reconsider a little bit of why now I like the newest Birth of a Nation a little bit more, because a Black man did a remake of that old racist movie, and I kind of like that. You know, makes me feel a little better about it. The movie's still not great though. Don't get excited. The movie Birth of a Nation is not great.
Right.
But
right.
I like it more now.
Yeah.
What were you saying, Luke?
During that comparison scene, for some reason, my watch starts vibrating, and I'm like, what the hell's going on, right? Because I have it in theater mode.
Time to be racist.
And I get the pop-up, and it says, your heartbeat is elevated to, it jumped. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I'm like, yeah, that was a pretty impactful moment. And it's funny just
you didn't
because
even
I was
it.
Like, I didn't even know it. But, my heartbeat was getting, much higher. So the watcher was like, hey, is everything all right?
Yeah. I feel like I want that now. When I go watch a movie, maybe I'll notice myself get, my butt pressure boiling or something. Like, are you pissed off right now? Yes! You know? Yeah. And I don't even know.
It's funny because you don't notice something like that in the moment. You're just kind of, in it. So you don't notice. Yeah. Especially something when you're just sitting down and if you don't pay attention, you're just so focused on something. You could easily lose track of what you're feeling.
That's really cool. I love it. And very, very potent, powerful stuff. This, I also feel the same thing you guys feel. As much as I was the guy who was defending Chirac a lot more, it is a movie that I don't feel the need to rush and rewatch yet. Black Klansman, though, as soon as this fucker comes out, I want to see it again.
Yeah, likewise.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel the same way with you guys. Anything, any last thoughts or closing thoughts on Black Klansman before we end the show? Awesome. All right, so
no.
I was gonna say, how would you recommend this to somebody?
What do you mean? How? Go watch it. You have your eyes. Do they work? Great. Go watch this movie.
Well, you know, a lot of people are dismissed.
Right, because if you go to someone and say you should be watching this, you feel like it's like a thing,
exactly,
guilt tripping them.
It's a movie
just
about
say, like,
this
it's,
black
it's
guy.
It's a really funny premise. It's amazing this guy actually did in real life. You should watch it for that. Maybe and let them trick them into finding the politics of this movie.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, maybe that's the best way. You know what? Whatever white friends you guys got out there, do that. or anyone, honestly. So that is it for our show. Thank you for listening to all that. You have been listening to Another Movie Podcast. Remember, we are typically a bi-weekly show. We come out every other weekend. Next time on the show, we'll be reviewing, I'm picking the movies. One of these I might change, but two of them definitely keeping. The two that I'm keeping are The Happy Time Murders, which should definitely be out by then, and a movie called The Writer, which is a movie I already bought on my iTunes. You guys can watch it. The other one is right now Mile 22, but subject to change. I'm hoping a better movie comes out. Remember, guys, you can support us in many ways. One is giving us an iTunes rating, hopefully 5 stars or higher. I know there's no 6, but 5 stars will be amazing. That's how other people can find us, by the way. And also, you can send feedback to podmoviecast@gmail.com, especially for this movie, for BlacKkKlansman. I would love to know what your opinions are, especially your opinions on how we approach the film, in essence. That would be great for us to know. You can check out our website, otherpodcast.com. And last but not least, let's give them our stuff. You can follow me at Twitter and Letterboxd at Armen Filmmaker, which is filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Luke, where can people find you?
Twitter, Slothmaster Luke.
Ralph?
You can follow me at Gamer Ralph. That is with 2 R's and an F.
All right, everybody. See you in 2 weeks. Until then, I'm Oscar. You are?
Ralph.
No, I was going to say a joke. And you are?
Still far away, Luke.
Yeah, yeah. All right, later.
In case I don't see ya. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
5. We're both on mute. All right, you ready?
You fucking... I knew it. I was like, one of these dips, they're both on mute, or Ralph's just being a dick.
Well, I was being a dick, yeah, but anyways, can we be ready?
Okay.
5.
4.
3.
2.
Why does your numbers take so long? What's going on
here? Why does it take you forever every time?
1.
0.